shows where P-51 Mustangs have flown, you'll recognize that sound as the Rolls-Royce Merlin. The Merlin, along with Pratt's amazing R-2800, might be considered the quintessential World War II fighter engine. Besides the Mustang, it powered the Spitfire, the Hawker Hurricane, the de Havilland Mosquito, and the Avro Lancaster Bomber. Today, more than 75 years after the Merlin was first designed, the engine lives on, flying frequently in the 100-plus Mustangs that still survive. Improbably, at least one flies daily. The Collings Foundation tours with its Merlin-powered P-51 Mustang, offering daily demonstration and rides across the country. AvWeb recently connected with the tour in Florida. We spoke to Mark Henley about just how you maintain a Merlin when the factories that built it have long since vanished. We're staying here under the wing of the B-17 with Mark Henley. Mark, tell us a little bit about the maintenance on the Merlin and the Mustang in general. Earlier you were telling me that the engine really doesn't require that much maintenance, but it does require some periodic maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, it's of course, it's a normal reciprocating engine. You got to do oil changes, and this engine actually has an aftermarket oil filter kit. So, you know, we'll take it and we'll cut those open, look, make sure that, you know, hopefully if we had an engine failure, you know, a lot of failures, you'll get some kind of indication if you got metal or whatever in the filter, and we kind of know ahead of time if we've got a problem. But, you know, this airplane is equipped with originally was equipped with bronze head nuts, or it's a brass bronze type material, and they were prone to crack. And so the recommendation has been every 25 hours to pull the heads and banks down and then retorque the heads, and of course you'd potentially find any cracked head nuts at that time. And so, but it, in order to do that, of course you end up having to pull the cams and all the cam drive mechanism off the head in order to retorque the heads.
Now, we should explain here that the Merlin is an overhead cam engine, gear-driven overhead cams, but the cams operate the valves through a rocker arm assembly, not directly on the valve itself.
Right. There's four rocker arms, if you will, for each cylinder. It's four valves per cylinder, two intake and two exhaust. And so you got quite a few fingers on each side that have to be adjusted each time, because anytime you disassemble that assembly, you put it back together, then you have to readjust all the valves on each cylinder.
So you have to retorque the heads, put the cam assembly back together again, and then check the valve clearances.
Right. And, of course, it's also kind of a tedious way of timing the cams. You have to go in and you have to make a certain adjustment on one cylinder, and then you take a certain size feeler gauge, you turn the cam till it just pinches the feeler gauge, then you turn the crankshaft to a particular mark, and then you install the quill shaft so it lines up so that repositions the cam properly, because as soon as you take the cam drive off, then you lose, you know, the timing as soon as you move that the quill shaft.
And how long does all that take typically?
Oh, you could probably, if you really knew what you're doing, you could probably do the whole thing in 3 or 4 hours.
Now, this is a water-cooled engine, meaning that it has a lot of water lines, it has a water pump and a radiator system. How reliable and maintenance-intensive is that system?
Actually, the coolant system is actually virtually trouble-free. This airplane has a Martin radiator, which is a kind of, if you will, an aftermarket radiator. The original radiators in the airplane were made by Harrison. A lot of people know the Harrison name from the automotive industry. Well, they, of course, made P-51 radiators back in the day, but the Martin radiator is a little more efficient, and so the engine typically doesn't have the heating problems that it did with the original radiator in them. You know, the main thing is, as long as you've got, you know, good integrity in your hoses and the radiator and the heads, you know, if it's not dripping water out, then you've got a good sound water system.
During the war, these engines were not typically flown many hours. I think you said about typically 200 hours, but they would frequently change engines.
Right. That's what I've heard, is that the engines, typically what happened in the field, you know, if they came in and the engine airplane had a problem, they were trying to rate it for the next mission. And so a lot of times what they could do is the guys in the field could change an engine in some cases a lot quicker than they could actually repair it. So what they do, they'd swap the engine and then send it back to a depot, and then they'd basically then go back and do whatever repairs it needed to the engine. And so most of the crew chiefs, they had a problem, they'd just change it. And so if you go back and look at the data, I think that's what kind of shortened the life on the engine as far as how often they went on a particular engine, because they, if it had any problem, if it had a major oil leak, or if it had a runability problem or something that was more than just plugs or some kind of simple fix, and they just pull the engine, stick another one on it.
Now, a Packard-built Merlin's under license from Rolls-Royce, and this is a Packard-built engine, so to speak, but those parts came from all over the place, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, for example, if you look at the block assembly, for example, was the most of them were made in a plant. Maytag made them. They had an aluminum casting plant, and so they made quite a few of them. And if you look down in between the valley on the cylinder head, you can actually see a Maytag emblem. A lot of the heads and banks were actually built by Buick. Packard assembled the engines, but a lot of the component parts were made from by other automotive manufacturers.
And speaking of parts, how is parts availability on these engines, which are really a 75-year-old engine by now?
The parts there are getting very hard to come by. There were several years, probably back in the, certainly after just after World War II, up probably into the early 80s, where the boat racers used quite a few of the engines, and then of course you got these big monster truck people. They used up a lot of the engines, and of course what they did, they that's where a lot of the parts went as well. And so the fact that they were able to, the boat racers were able to go to turbines, kind of spared some of the P-51 parts, but they've gotten where pistons and camshafts and heads and banks are really getting hard to come by, and of course they've gotten very expensive, because obviously it's a law of supply and demand. When those parts become scarce, then they become very expensive. The Mustang industry, or Mustang owners, are fortunate that Jack Roush, Roush Industries, of course, who owns a couple of P-51s, has actually has an engine shop and started manufacturing new component parts on kind of a limited basis. They're making pistons and camshafts, and they have the ability to refurbish quite a few of the parts, like the crank cases and heads and banks. They have the ability of rebuilding those that people in the past haven't seemed to be able to do quite to the same degree that they do. And so they're putting new life into these engines which would otherwise have been somewhat numbered in days.
Now, the supercharger is said to be the secret of the Merlin's performance success. How is that to maintain and obtain parts for?
I don't really think that the supercharger is usually not much of a problem. The engine, it's a 1,650 cubic inch engine putting out almost 1,500 horsepower. And if you look at most of the other aircraft engines that are out there, you're talking about almost a horsepower per cubic inch. And any engine that starts putting out that kind of horsepower, then that puts a lot of strain on the component parts. And obviously airplane engines are designed to be lightweight. Then things like connecting rods and crankshafts and crankcases, where all the load is. And those are the components that don't last long. The supercharger they can have problems, but are typically not the big problem items. It's usually connecting rods and pistons and heads and banks, and that's where most of your problems come from, and that's where most of the component parts are getting hard to come by.
Now, as a member of the Shell Aerobatic team, you fly the T6 during the air show season pretty much daily, and you maintain it yourself. How does the Merlin compare to the radio engines in terms of maintenance?
Well, that's like I was talking about earlier about getting a horsepower per cubic inch. See, the engine on a T6 is a 1,340 cubic inch, but it's only 600 horsepower, and so there you're not even getting a half a horsepower per cubic inch. And of course, so what ends up happening is the reliability of that engine is much higher. I mean, we'll run the 1340. We'll run it 12, 13, 1400 hours, basically with no problem. I mean, we may, maybe every once in a while, maybe have a magneto issue or, obviously plug wires from time to time. But other than that, you basically put gas and oil in it and fly. And it should. But there again, the engine is a whole lot more robust, and you're only getting just under a half a horsepower per cubic inch, and that's the biggest difference.
When you're out with the Collins Foundation, the Mustang is flying daily, and it's flying several flights a day, which may be as intense a service as it had during the war. How about the rest of the airplane? Is it fairly reliable? Does it require much maintenance?
No, the airframe, we certainly, tires and brakes are an issue because we certainly put a lot more cycles on the airplane than they did in combat. I mean, a typical combat escort mission might be 8 hours. And in 8 hours, I mean, we could do as many as 15 or 20 landings, depending on the type of flights that we do. Our flights are either half hour or hour flights, and then most of our moves are not more than probably a half hour to an hour. And so we put a lot more cycles on the airplane. But, North American probably built some of the best airplanes during the World War II era, and they're just... I mean, they're bulldog strong. They just go and go and go. The power plant on a Mustang is this probably if it has an Achilles heel, it's the power plant. The airframe is just about bulletproof.
Now, this airplane, this P-51C, is not actually a World War II model, but is actually a scratch-built airplane?
Well, what it was built out of a bunch of surplus parts. Of course, all the original BC models, of course, were single-seaters. Well, this airplane was custom-built into a two-seat version, hence a TF designation, but this airplane was not originally a TF Mustang. It was custom-built in that configuration. But, of course, what it ends up doing for us is it gives us the opportunity to do flight instruction. All the pilots, all our P-51 pilots that fly the airplane are all CFIs, and so we can actually go up and actually teach the people that come out and fly the airplane how to fly P-51. I mean, everything from just normal maneuvers up to loops and barrel rolls. I tell you, take somebody that's one of their dreams or one of the items on their bucket list for them to go up and do a roll or a loop for the first time at a P-51, it's a real thrill.
Well, I'm looking forward to my flight here in about a half hour. Mark, thanks very much for speaking with us.
You're going to have a good time, I guarantee it.
You've been listening to Mark Henley of the Collings Foundation. For information on the Foundation's tour schedule, log on to collingsfoundation.org. I'm Paul Bertarelli, reporting for AbWeb. Thanks for listening.